Everyone stepped out of the WAC, stretching and circulating blood back through their bodies. All were cramped from the close conditions. As Ryan did a deep knee bend and was rewarded with a sharp crack of both knees popping, Jorge squatted next to him. Ryan knew from the expression on the muscular Puerto Rican's face, the man hadn't cared much for camping so soon.
We should continue while the sun is still up. Night is the Chupacabra's friend, Ryan Cotter.
Not used to having his orders questioned, Ryan felt his temper start to flare until he got a good look at Jorge's face, open and innocent. The statement hadn't been a challenge, merely a fact.
If so, Jorge, that's the best time to go hunting for them, right?
Jace, I suppose, but I'm not sure I like your logic.
Jack stepped next to Ryan.
I do. Take Battle to Dan. They make first move.
That's the way they want to play it. Either way, we've been traveling all day. We need to get some rest, let our bodies cool off. We've still got a few hours before dark. It's best to grab some sleep and downtime before going into the rainforest any farther.
Jorge slapped at a flying insect that resembled a mosquito.
If you say so. You are the one with experience in such affairs, not I.
That's right, Jorge. Now get some shut-eye.
The light was dim. It was time to move out and into the forest proper. Ryan had chosen to ignore his own advice, keeping watch over the small party. After an hour or so of trying to sleep while swatting at the swarms of mosquitoes and other winged insects in the heated air, JB had done likewise, getting quietly to his feet and joining his comrade. Neither of them had spoken as the armorer took up position across from Ryan, enabling each man to watch the other's back as they guarded their resting friends. After consulting his wrist chron, Ryan had walked softly among the others, shaking them gently awake. Luis stood up, moving more slowly than the others, but not noticeably so. When erect, he bent back down to pick up his weapon, and promptly fell forward on his knees, dropping his retrieved long blaster as both hands went frantically to his throat. Noticing his plight from the corner of her vision, Christy was at his side first, kneeling as she tried to determine what was wrong. Her strong hands grasped him by the shoulders, trying to stop the frantic spasm creeping through the Puerto Rican's tanned body. A coating of sweat had spread across his skin, as if he'd walked through a fine mist.
Luis, what is it? What's wrong?
By that time, Soto and the others had joined Christy and Luis, surrounding the kneeling pair. Soto made a series of clipped inquiries in English, then Spanish. Luis didn't respond to either language. The big man looked at them, panic in his eyes, and tried to speak, but all that came forth was a thick grunting sound from deep within his barrel chest.
Can't breathe. Hurts.
He's some kind of epileptic? Gonna throw a fit?
We need to get him down if he is. I saw Mildred deal with an epileptic once, and that's what she said to do.
The skin on Luis's face was taut and cherry red. He pulled free of Christy's hands and fell on his side, the unearthly wailing still coming from his mouth, until the sound was cut short and replaced by a bubbling of crimson. Dark, nearly black, blood splattered on his shirt and face as he thrashed in the dirt.
What do we do?
Nothing we can do.
Dean stood next to his father, watching, an expression of sheer horror on his young face. He'd seen death before, but usually it came from an outside source, not from inside a man's own body. Luis bent his dying physique, his neck muscles taut as bands of stretched steel. His upper torso arched into a backward U-shape, the spine beneath contorted into a direction never intended by nature. The man's arms twisted and shook, his entire body writhing in a mass of agony before he flopped over on his back. His legs kicked a few times, feet bent out like the graceful arc of a dancer, then his heels drummed a last tempo of pain as he finally died. At that second, Christy spotted new movement, like the fin of a shark breaking the surface of the ocean under the front of his sweat-soaked shirt.
There, lover.
Ryan drew his panga and stepped close, reaching down and slitting open the tight cotton t-shirt. The cloth, damp with sweat and blood, tore easily as he pulled the blade of the panga up and across the fabric, revealing Luis's bare torso. There were wiggling movements under the dead man's skin, as if something was trying to frantically break out. An angled something, like a broken bone trying to rip free of the skin. Only there were no bones in the immediate area of the disturbance.
What the hell is that?
JB's knuckles were white as he clutched his well-maintained Uzi, ready to send a barrage of 9mm bullets into the mystery inside the corpse on the ground before him. Ryan stepped back and watched the queer undulating movements at a safe distance.
Don't know offhand.
Yes, something inside him.
As if in reply, a single oversized mandible, 2 inches long, poked through the flesh of Luis's stomach. A shiny black eye tube, all wet and glistening.
Bug.
The albino had seen all kinds of insects during his youth in the fetid swamps of Louisiana. All kinds of squirming, crawling, creeping insects, and most of them large and nasty. Biting bugs, sucking bugs, flying bugs. The kind where it took far more than a single well-placed stomp to end their scurrying across a kitchen floor. The cut was jagged, but straightforward, like the release of a zipper as it widened. Some clear stomach fluid and digestive juices spurted up at one point, but quickly trickled down to nothingness. Both cruel black mandibles were free now, along with the insect's small head. Overblown fangs, sickle-shaped like inverted question marks, extended from the front of the bug in an almost comical display of exaggeration. Above the quivering mandibles on the shiny black head was a mass of compound eyes. Festooned about the eyes were four horned antennae quivering in the naked air. Approximately 5 inches long and streamlined, the creature continued to eat its way free, poking out the rest of its shiny black carapace and six legs, and coming to a stop on the lifeless form of Luis. Each member of the group had the uncomfortable sensation of being studied, the watchers being watched in return by the insect.
I know this insect. They are very rare and unusual. They eat more than your flesh, see? For since they burrow inward, they also have the access and the hunger to devour your soul. But no one I know has died from the beetle's kiss in many years.
Deciding there was nothing left worth eating inside Luis, the beetle scurried off the dead man's stomach and into the forest grass with surprising mobility and speed. Before a single word could be spoken, Jack responded. Red blood spurted out as if from an overripe piece of fruit, and the insect's twin mandibles clawed at the air like miniature ebony hands, reaching up and wiggling for the sky, before becoming as still as the lifeless body of its victim. Jack stepped forward to retrieve the knife. He raised, then lowered a boot heel, and twisted his foot to crush the remains of the insect into the grassy soil of the forest floor.
Hate bugs.
Virginia, December 28th, 2000. Doc Tanner didn't bother to look up when the smooth metal alloy and plexiglass door of his one-room holding facility slid sideways into the far wall. His attentions were on the thick hardcover book he was holding, one of more than two dozen family biographies he'd read recently about the famed Kennedy dynasty. A tragic fall of three, beginning with the president and ruler of Camelot, the one and only Lusty Jack, then his second-in-command with his own eyes on the prize, the compassionate Bobby, and finally ending with the lesser of the Trinity, Teddy, who'd fallen prey to circumstance and timing and seen the dynasty apparently crumble to dust on the cold banks of the Chappaquiddick before his remarkable political recovery in the presidential race of 1992. The floor of the small quarters was covered with stacks of books and magazines. Overhead, a color television set was on, but Doc had the sound turned down, finding himself quickly bored with the images. A fantastic invention, he had to admit. But as for the choice and quality of what was being broadcast, a lot was left to be desired. Aware of another's presence in the crowded room, and also aware that whoever it was didn't intend on leaving, Doc decided to speak, but still didn't grace his visitor with a glance.
More questions? Perhaps I shall be allowed to clamber half-naked upon your wondrous treadmill and run myself ragged for the amusement of your note-taking associates. Or better still, perhaps we shall test my psychic abilities. Tell me, what do you see in your mind? A circle? A square? A picture of a cross? Your own rancid, smiling face?
No, none of that.
Doc lifted a bony arm.
Or do you require yet another pint or three of my bodily fluids?
Why take a pint when we have drained the entire store?
What, pray tell, does that mean?
Tanner, you are without a doubt the biggest, most puckered asshole I've ever had the fortune to encounter. Stubborn, arrogant, prideful, and for all the wrong reasons. You get on my nerves like no one else. Not even my first wife nor my sainted mother. Damn her immortal soul, may she rot in peace.
Am I to take comfort in your compliments?
I had the option of having you terminated, you know. A simple order. My decision. No one really cares about you anymore. You are no longer special. And while I know...